Accession number 11770, Reel 1.
Mr. Yorison, Reel 1. Could you tell me, first of all, where you come from, please?
Yes, I was born in the Netherlands in 1917.
Whereabouts?
In Dordrecht, which is an old city, southwest of Rotterdam. Distance of only 15 miles, but as you know, the Netherlands are a rather heavily populated country. And
What did your father do for a living?
My father was an architect. My father was an architect and practiced in Dordrecht. And had lived there, was born there, was born in Dordrecht too, and lived there from, I would say, and I'm quite right, 1912 onwards he practiced there. Before that he practiced in Amsterdam and in other places, and belonged at that stage to the avant-garde of architects, and worked with well-known architects in the Netherlands, well-known architects like Kuiper and others. My eldest brother, we are four brothers, was born in Amsterdam, but the other three, I am the third of the four, were born in Dordrecht and went to school there.
What was your education?
Well, I was the ordinary primary school, and then what the equivalent of a grammar school, which was called in the Netherlands higher civil school, Burger Civic School or Civil School, which was a 5 years course, which is corresponds to the education that you receive at the public school prior to going to university. Then at the end of my school years, when I was 18, I left and I entered the Navy. I had wanted before then, I had wanted to go to university to study geology and what you call here the grades, but my education was not, didn't include the classics. So it would have meant another year of study and other reasons too, economic reasons, and also purely private and personal conception of what was happening in the 30s were, with the rise of Germany and the recovery of Germany from First World War, I felt that to go to the Navy wouldn't be a bad idea. And the Navy, of course, was, as it is in the United Kingdom, a very traditional service. And I had not many direct connections with the Navy, save one who helped me considerably. He was a much older, long retired captain in the Netherlands Navy, one of those that had grown up in the time of sail, and he of course had many contacts. And with his help, I was introduced, because the family connections counted a lot in those days, as they do in every navy all over the world, in all the great and traditional navies. If you have either a father or an uncle or a nephew or a cousin or a grandfather who served and was an admiral, you were all right. You came from the right background. But in any case, I entered Naval College in 1935, and in 1938 I got my commission. Almost immediately after I got my commission, I was posted to one of our cruisers that was employed in the light cruisers, they were the Java, in the escorting duties in the Straits of Gibraltar. Between, we were then bunkering both in Tangiers and in Gibraltar. Didn't very last very long. It was the beginning of the Civil War, and I was posted in December. I was then I came to an each of Netherlands Majesty's gunboats on the West Indies station. And we left in, that was in 1939, early 1939. We left for Curaçao, which was the naval base for our one and only warship that was stationed in those waters. And for a year, until the end of November, we were there. And it was, of course, in September 1939 that war broke out.
What was your own attitude towards the neutrality of the Netherlands?
You see, we were by tradition neutral, a neutrality which had been able to keep in the First World War. The neutrality, of course, was deeply ingrained in the Netherlands historically. In the 19th century, almost say part of the constitution, I would say, and for a small country, in having gone through the trauma of the division of the country between Belgium and the Netherlands in the 1830 to 1840 period under King William I, that neutrality was an anchor, a mainstay, a center of our political thinking. The neutrality policy was kept upright until the very last moment, until May 1940, when the Germans invaded at all cost. It was upheld. In the First World War, one must realize that our neutrality was reinforced by not necessarily a great sympathy for the Germans, although economically we were closely, as closely linked as we are nowadays and forever will be. But the Boer War had left deep impression in the Netherlands, and our sympathies were definitely with the Boers and not with the British. So another reason why this concept of neutrality was so strong. And it took a long time to get over it.
Did you personally think that the Netherlands could stay out of the war, though, before May 1940?
When I certainly didn't think so when I joined the Navy in 1935. I felt at the time that any nation And I say that not only in retrospect and all that, I felt right from the day that I joined the Navy that any conflict, if it would break out, because, I mean, we could hardly have predicted a Second World War. We all thought that accommodations were possible, that it, Germany had although lost the war, was very severely punished economically and otherwise. And then came the advent of Hitler in Germany, the Nazis in Germany, and that from the very beginning, the majority of the Netherlands and the thinking part of the nation thought that was the most impossible leadership. We were great admirers in my family, great admirers of people like Stresemann. We'd had lifelong relations with Germany. My father had. My grandfather traveled there often. My family traveled there often. I remember that they their honeymoon was spent in Saxony. The library of my father had a great number of German, of English books, yes, and quite a lot of French, but the majority of things were German. No question about it. I mean, the first great writers that I knew were German writers and German poets, and the tradition was very strong that way. And we are a continental power. I mean, and the influence and the relationship between Germany and the Netherlands are very strong. But then, coming back to the first point and the first question, is that I never believed in neutrality as such. I've never believed in it. Whatever the future would bring at that stage, the concept of neutrality is, in a modern world, virtually impossible. You have to, either as a nation or a person, take the side of not necessarily your own side, but you have to take sides. You have to choose. Nobody can avoid choices, either in life, in faith, or in life, or in any other thing. Because I added to that in the family itself, in particular with my parents, my father, and very strong humanist tradition, which has persisted throughout. He was rather a romantic, but at the same time a man of very strong humanist tradition and extremely well read, perhaps a little oversensitive, but that can't do any harm, not in any society as such. And he took his duty towards the society very deeply and with great conviction.
So what were you doing in May 1940 personally when the Germans attacked?
Now that we returned in December 1939 from the West India Station. The 3rd of September saw us there. We still had to uphold the neutrality in that place. We even had to forbid the French naval tanker of bunkering oil in Curaçao, which was had a great refinery, as you know, and principal refineries of Venezuelan oil were in Curaçao and Aruba. Aruba was the American ones, and Shell had its refineries in Curaçao, one of the three islands there, that group. And then in December of the year, or rather the end of November, we were called to our, what we call our wartime stations. And the ship that I was serving on, Johan Maurits von Nassau, was then sent to the Netherlands. and we took up our positions, our wartime, conflict position, what we then called war position, was to be destined to support and any possible offensive actions against the great dikes which separate, link the northern Holland province with Friesland, and are the great dike between the two parts. Now, what we mostly did was actually convoy duties of German ships that went along the coast from Rotterdam to Hamburg and sailed along the coast, and actually within the 3 mile zone, and it was our duty to see to it that they didn't do anything peculiar, or in a certain way to protect them against possible attacks of the Royal Air Force, who naturally would attack that shipping if it came outside the 3 mile zone. And there were particular points where they couldn't stay within that zone, because at the northern part of North Holland, that is not possible, they had to go outside. But then, at the end of April, I was called quite suddenly to join a small group of naval officers who had just been commissioned prior to the earlier than it was customary, because the fleet in the Dutch East Indies, which was the principal part, principal base for the whole of the Royal Netherlands Navy, had asked for young officers to join the fleet in the Netherlands East Indies as soon as possible. So, as I had not yet completed the 3 year service, which is traditional, the first service that you did in those days, and only 1 year in the West Indies, in the tropics, I had another 2 years to go. They appointed me as the senior officer of that contingent, and so I left the Netherlands by train on the 2nd or the 3rd of May 1940, and then I went by train to Genoa. We boarded a ship called the Christian Huygens, and from there we sailed, and we were once day through the day after we left the Suez Canal. It was the 10th of May, and it's the invasion. So that was then.
This was a liner, was it?
As a liner, yes. The liner of the, one of the, I think it's the Rotterdam Sonoid, but I'm not, I can't guarantee that. In any case, we arrived in the 17th of May, I think it was the 17th of May, in Batavia, now Jakarta, and then I was posted immediately to Surabaya, which was our principal naval base. There was a question of a choice between whether I would serve in submarines or I could join the coastal forces that went under the name of the MTB service, motor torpedo boats, what we then called torpedo motor boats, in Surabaya itself. After some days with the submarine service, because the administration wasn't quite certain what to do with me, I was posted then in that same month, in May, to the TM service, torpedo motorboat service, and I stayed with that. They were just beginning. We had a few boats which were at that stage becoming operational, and they were small boats. I got some particulars here, but that they are well known and they're well documented in naval histories. And we had altogether, I think, ultimately 12 boats operational when at the invasion. In any case, we practiced a lot. We were, most of us were regular Navy, but we had a few of the Naval Reserve service, and they were all under the command of Lieutenant Commander Riedel, who was leading our great inspiration, because he worked extremely hard at it. But as it was a new service and untried and a novelty to all, we were not, I would say, particularly favorites of the very well-established torpedo services and torpedo establishment, which looked after principally the submarines and destroyers. That was all very natural, because we had a smaller type. The boats were built for a smaller type of torpedo, the 45-centimeter torpedo, and not for the larger, the 53, which had been more or less standard, both on destroyers and with submarines. And our submarine service, which you may know, was one of the very well and very oldest in the navies of the West. We had our submarine service dates from almost the earliest time, at the time that the submarines came into service in this country too. We had them before the First World War, and our tradition of our submarines was well established and proved itself immensely important. And I would say that during the whole war, it is submarines who contributed more to the Netherlands war effort than any other service that we had. That also because after the Battle of the Java Sea, we had no longer a navy of any importance but for our submariners in both parts of the world, both in this country and afterwards in the Mediterranean and in the Far East, the three principal terra places of operation. In any case, then it was at the end of on the 7th of December 1941 that our service was quite all right. I mean, it was well advanced. We could do we could do operations. We were well established that way. Our boats, more or less, all operational. We were very small ones. We had a very small crew. A crew of nine, I think, or 9 or 11, depending on whether we were a leading boat or not a leading boat. And then when war broke out in December, I was made senior officer under the grand title of commander of the division of TM boats.
Had the Japanese attack in the Far East taken you by surprise?
No. Yes. Yes. When it came naturally as a surprise. Although, when I say the moment came as a surprise, it didn't come as a surprise that they were going to attack us. We were very conscious of the fact that there was only one potential enemy, and that were the Japanese. That feeling was extremely strong with the actual sea-going navy. And I think that in the Netherlands, East Indies, we were about the only service that was very conscious of that. Not all through the navy, but principally, yes. Certainly with the submarines, and certainly with the major units, we realized that there would be no other enemy there, and had never known a potential enemy but the Japanese, particularly, of course, after their actions in Manchuria and China, etc., etc. I mean, after their expansionist policy and co-prosperity spheres. We went through all the negotiations, and they were very intensive, where the Japanese tried to dominate, I would say, our exports and our markets. There was a constant interchange and a constant negotiations going on between Java, between Batavia and Tokyo. In the meantime, of course, one mustn't forget that the government was in exile, and the Netherlands were completely occupied. So the emphasis of our war effort was totally in the Netherlands, East Indies, which worked independently, almost independently from the Netherlands, although naturally it was the Netherlands cabinet and the Netherlands government in exile that were in virtual the one that dictated the policy, but as had been traditionally, the Netherlands East Indies played quite an independent role, and that is to say, it did, in practical politics, all the negotiations were between Japan and the Netherlands East Indies were conducted by and under the aegis of the then Governor General, a man of extremely high character, ability and quality, very strong-minded man, Gerda van Starkenborst-Stachauer. Now, in the Navy itself, and that is the only place that I could serve in, although I had some very good friends who made me aware more than I otherwise would have been of the political implications and of the political environment in which the Netherlands in Sindhi found itself, we knew that it was coming, and we knew too that we were awfully badly prepared for it. Because the extraordinary thing was, and I felt that right from throughout, is that we didn't take anything seriously. We never took the Japanese seriously. We never knew to what extent they were prepared for conflict. We didn't realize, I think, in any way, not in our service, that is to say, the utter dedication of the Japanese to their tasks, whatever their tasks may be. One calls it easily and obedience to the emperor, subservience to the emperor. But in fact, it was much more than that. It was an ingrained part of the Japanese people. Part of the Japanese people is that their discipline.